You're listening to Pirate Cat Radio, KPCR LP 92.9 FM Los Gatos, and KMRT LP 101.9 FM Santa Cruz.
Hi, I'm Lee Upton, and you're listening to Drinks with Tony.
Get on the Drinks with Tony show. Yeah.
You're listening to Drinks with Tony. I'm your host, Tony Duchesne. Today on the show, we have Lee Upton. She's the author of The Withers. Lee, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm so happy to have the chance to talk with you.
Yeah, is it because I have this pleasant look that I'm easily talking to-able, or is it?
you have a kind and charismatic face, so I'm really happy to be here.
Listen to me pulling for compliments here. It's such a low status, low self-esteem thing to do. Fish for compliments. I went fishing there, and then I caught some compliments. Welcome to the show. The Withers came out last month, right?
Yeah, it came out. Yeah, it's already July, isn't it? It came out June 23rd.
Yeah, cool. And how does it feel? I always say this is your second novel, right? So
Let's see. It's my third.
Okay.
Actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels great. So far, people who've read it have been really wonderful to me about it, and seem it's been meaningful to those who've read it. So that's a great grace to me.
Yeah. Yeah. At the same time, yeah, when you're writing, do you worry about that, or we're worried about so much when we're writing. Is that included in one of the many worries?
I try not to let it be, because I just don't have any control about how people receive what I write, and I write in different genres. And this year I have The Withers just came out, which is speculative fiction in some ways. It's been called gothic fiction, science fiction, medical fiction, and I also have a comic novel coming out, Tabitha Stay Up. So I'm swerving a lot as a writer with different subgenres. So I have absolutely no control, just hope.
Oh my God, I'm gonna get that tattooed on my arm. That is perfect. the funny thing about genre is I get so confused, so easily confused. I just had an agent say no to the book that I'm querying, but he said no in the nicest way. He just said, they have this new term called upmarket, right? Which is supposed to be kind of skewing towards speculative fiction, I guess. So I've been saying upmarket for my book. Mm-hmm. But I don't say it in the query letter, but if there's more talk about it, or sometimes I'll say it in the query letter, but I didn't for this guy. And he said, oh, this looks really good. I just, this is just isn't my wheelhouse, because I represent upmarket and horror. And I'm like,
I thought
I was like pitching upmarket. So I was very polite about it. I said, I just want to ask, because like in my first book, they were going between young adult and literary fiction. Could have been either or. And they said, and my agent said, no, it's literary fiction. Like, stay and keep out of the way of it. And I was just like, yeah, I don't know. You guys do what you do, right? It's just, I'm just over here to write. Anyway, so I led with that. And I was like, can you tell me what you think the genre is from your point of view? And he said, humorous fabulist.
Wow.
Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Not me neither. I'm like, I just said, I was like, oh, thanks a lot. And I'm like, then I'm looking online. I'm like, what the hell is humorous fabulist? Turns out it's kind of like magical realism, but not. Mm-hmm. It's a little more, I guess it's a little more literary. One of the titles that came up was Kneller's Happy Campers, which was made into a film called Risk Cutters, A Love Story. I don't know if you ever saw that film, and I love that film. And I went, oh my God, okay, I'll take it. I'm humorous fabulous from here on out until another agent says, what? This is upmarket. And I'll be like, yeah, okay. I don't even know how to do genre. You were like rattling off genres, like, what's going on. And it was impressive.
I don't know about that, but it's that people have tried to fit the novel into these various categories. So, I think of it as literary fiction with some sorts of thriller-like elements within it. But I think it's a time when we're just all mashing different genres together to see what we can make. So it's really terrific in some ways that the gatekeepers are kind of a little, well, in some ways, a little looser about what constitutes what they want to read. But on the flip side, it's almost as if there are more and more sort of subgenres in which one can be pegged somehow. So I've had this book, The Withers, a wonderful interviewer, Alice M. from X-Ray Magazine, said that it's really gothic fiction. And I love that because I love Daphne du Maurier. I love the gothic in some ways. No, kind of gothic fiction and
Gothic.
ladies' companion gothic fiction because
Lady's
it
Companion.
the
What does that mean?
yeah well, in The Withers, it's set in in the near future, the northeastern part of the United States. There has been a epidemic of organ failure, and now there are organ traffickers. So it's like horror in some ways. The woman who the novel focuses on, Riata, she has had a heart transplant, and it has been a kind of experimental procedure according to some new protocols. And she's absolutely destitute and has to live it somewhere. And her surgeon and the surgeon's partner or spouse take her in. But living with them, she has no money, nothing to help her. So she's almost like a companion to the surgeon's wife, who is herself works at the hospital and is a kind of therapist there. So my main character then is dependent on the kindness of these people. So she's almost like a companion. So there's never a sense of a kind of equality for her while she's in their house, even though it's a sanctuary for her in this sort of brutal world. So, I think it's made me kind of happy that people have, called it, put it in multiple categories. That makes me feel, well, maybe it's doing multiple things and can please people in multiple ways.
Yes. I agree. Wait, so with it's kind of like this body organ harvesting. Where do you enter the story when you realize, oh wait, I'm writing the novel about this? Do you start with the character and work on the dynamic of how these characters are playing together, and then realize, oh wait, if I make this an organ donor heist type situation, then blank? Or do you go, let's do something about organ doning or organ harvesters, and now let me start with the character? How did it work for you on this one?
Yeah, it actually worked. Situation came first. I had seen an article about, this was years ago, a couple who died while on vacation. When their bodies were returned to their home country, their organs were missing.
No way.
Yeah.
Okay, please, 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 please tell me what country.
They were returned to the US. I don't remember what country, I believe, but this is that couple weren't the first to have this happen. In some cases, it could be traced back to forensic analysis at the home country. In other cases, the suspicion was organ trafficking, certainly.
Wow.
Yeah. So that story just played around in my mind for a while. So I started, usually I start with character, but I started with that situation and then think of a woman. What would it be like to be a woman during this epidemic who had to have a diseased organ implanted into her? The odd thing, I mean, this novel I started quite a while ago. It was the first of my novels finished, but it'll be a later novel published. And I wrote it before COVID, but already in the early drafts, There are controversial theories, uncertainty about origin. There's the sense of conspiracies emerging. So I think that even though I didn't know about COVID yet, there's a sense that you could think about what would happen within a culture if there was a massive disease. So I worked from there. And then also I think about characters, and I really will kind of want to bond with characters. I don't know if you're the same way,
Oh,
but
yeah.
you got to live with them for what, 300 pages, at least 60,000 words. And I was talking to another writer, and I asked her about her relationship with her characters because I feel that there's a kind of bonding or affinity that you go through with this character. And I love what she said. She said, "My relationships with my character is like a passionate love affair." And I
Yeah.
thought that was so charming. And then I thought, I can't quite say that about my characters. I think of them more as a really deep and immersive friendship. And I think of that in the terms of a really good friendship where you don't judge the friend, you listen, you observe, you're helpful to the friend, you allow the friend to kind of grow and change, but with loopholes, because in a real friendship, you wouldn't put your friend in trouble the way you put a character in trouble, nor would you gossip about them. In a novel, it's like a long gossip session in some ways about that character.
It is a bit insane. It trips me out, and I continue to realize that when I'm writing and I'm in a novel for say 4 years or so, and I'm with my protagonist and all the characters around him, that I have a more intimate relationship with my character than I do with my friends and my family, because I'm spending 4 hours a day with this person. So there's an intimacy there. I like to think about it as an erotic relationship, but it's no, I'm kidding. It's a very codependent relationship though, because they're very needy and they always want me to show up to the page, and it pisses me off. I'm like, can I just take a day off? And they're needy. No, you're coming to us, we need to talk. And I'm like, okay, here we go again, what do you want? But that's the best way to write a novel, is just to be utterly codependent with your characters. For me, I'd rather do it with characters than in real life. Just get all the codependency out, you know.
No, I love what you just said. I know with the Withers, with the character Riata, to move into the way she thought, I had to really think about how her body felt because she was
Oh,
often
yeah.
exhausted, often ill. But I wanted to give her the ability to, as much as possible, control her life. And so that was really a challenge to figure that out for her. The other novel I have coming out in September is called Tabitha Stay Up. And it's a standalone, but it's also a sequel. It's a sequel to the previous comic novel, Tabitha Get Up. And my relationship with Tabitha is really quite intense. It's not like a passionate love affair, but it is sort of kind of one of the easiest relationships I've had in my life. I don't know for you, but when I wrote that first novel and now this second novel, there was a sense that I really worked with rhythms with her voice. Her voice has a particular kind of rhythm. She
Oh,
has a
cool.
particular outlook on the world, and also the structure of the novel is like diary entries. So that's getting very close to the character. It's also allowing the character to self-report her own humiliations and embarrassments in a kind of comic universe. So I wrote that after writing The Withers, and in some ways it was such fun to go into a world where there aren't organ traffickers. There are other ways in which the character has to fight for self-preservation, but I really loved both of those characters, having both of them to deal with, and both of them in some ways battling things that I think we may not be surrounded by organ traffickers, but both characters in the two novels They're just trying to get out of the bed in the morning. Like in some ways, the novels are about how do you defeat despair? How do you
Yeah.
get up? How do you, move forward in the world? So they both do battle in some ways with demons.
And which I think is relatable to everybody, because it's like, how do we wake up in the morning? I here's what, yeah, I'm not a guy that's usually open to like joy and happiness. I'm trying to be more open to this, right? I'm trying to look at things in a positive light, and it doesn't come too often. But when I wake up in the morning, I wake up full of joy and delight. I don't know why. I give it 3 to 4 minutes, and then I'm right back into my cynical self. But for some odd reason, it's like, ah, and I guess I'm still coming out of my subconscious haze of the dreams. And then all of a sudden, it's just like, oh, reality. Oh, again? Anyway, how is your how do you wake up in the morning? Are you a yay? Or are you like, oh, this, and then let's work through it?
Well, I was going to say that maybe you wake up, with that kind of joy and delight at first is because you have your art form. Everyone needs their art form, or that's there waiting for you. And what you talked about, your character is giving you the nudge and being needy. You need it, and that's that joy and delight. It's always there.
I
With
think you're
me,
right. Yeah, because I work with other authors too, and I'm working with an author on his book, and I was going over that today before we had this taping, and I was just, even when I'm fixing problems with other authors' characters, I'm having a blast, and I'm because I could see it from a different angle. I'm like, oh, where's this? And I'm excited to like just find ways to make it just sing instead. It's just fun. It's fun even if it's not my, it's more fun when it's not my characters. It's like less responsibility. It's not my name. You're the one going down.
I love that. I mean, that's that gratitude, because whatever people do that's creative, and just anything can be creative. If you have it in your life and have it to return to, that's just a wonderful, wonderful thing to be thankful for. So how yes, how I wake up? I wake up and I want coffee. That's how I wake up
Oh,
right
is
away.
it coffee like the greatest thing on
It's
earth?
coffee. It's so great. And yeah, it
Yeah.
is. And we had a. I also have a rabbit too. I won't go into it, or we'll be here for hours. But a rabbit was abandoned on our driveway, and so early in the
Wow.
morning, there's coffee. There's rabbit.
Do you
So
think
I.
the rabbit was drawn to you and to your life in some way?
Oh, that's really interesting. The rabbit came at a very difficult time. And so sometimes I think animals have a way of just,
Yeah.
they're so precious, and they kind of, we magnetize toward them, and vice versa. I know, in The Withers, there's a really great dog, and I love that dog in the novel. And the dog's name is Petals, and she's an older dog. And when the novel, I mean, the novel sounds so grim, organ trafficking, right? But there's a great dog, and there's deep friendship and slowly growing love. There's also obsessive love, but having an animal somehow helped me navigate that, to
Oh,
give
that's,
some
yeah.
bright spots
Yeah.
within it.
Why, what was the name Petals? Was it Petals? How did you come up with that name for the dog?
I don't know. I don't know how it works with you, but names are really important to
Yeah.
me in working. I was talking, and I've talked to people about this before. So, I was writing a short story, and there was a character named Ray, and I knew his first name was Ray. He worked in an office. I needed to get a last name for him, but I couldn't quite work it out, the character at all. Couldn't figure out Ray, Ray, Ray. What is Ray's last name? Then one day I went out to my car, and you know how a car has an illuminated panel that'll tell you, if something's wrong with your
Right.
car.
Yeah.
And the illuminated panel in my car said "trunk ajar," and then I knew his name is Ray Chunk Ajar.
Whoa.
Yeah,
I like that a lot.
and it, it, It just so it, I also I don't know if you feel this way too, but I feel when I'm writing very intensively, it's almost as if eventually the world kind of cooperates and you start seeing the names from your novel and places, and then the names start coming, you know. But sometimes I've had to fight a bit at first. Do you find that to be true?
There's times when, well, I handwrite all my first drafts. So when I'm writing and I gotta come up with a character name, sometimes I just write it and don't think about it, and it works. With this last novel that I'm querying right now, I wanted to be so specific on the names because I didn't want the names to be related to anybody or anything in my entire life or any reference point. That I wanted just nothing. So how can these names mean nothing to me and yet still sing on the page for these characters? And I found all these, I named one character after a coffee barista. He since passed away, so I'm very happy because when he was still alive, I was working at his coffee shop on early drafts, and I'm like, Jose, dude, you're the there's a barista in my novel, and his name's Jose, and it's so you're in it. And he was so stoked, he's just like couldn't believe it. And then now that he passed away, I'm like, I'm really kind of glad I attached one character name in there. That's
That's
pretty
really
cool.
nice.
But for some odd reason, sometimes I like them to mean things about my past, and for some reason, I would worked very hard on these character names to have zero meaning to me in connection to anything in my past. I don't know why. The next book, it'll be all sappy, and I'll be, the names will be all included, all in all my regrets and my triumphs. I don't know. We'll find out. But yeah, it's those names stick. Wow, they really stick. And I've learned that through having stuff published and having it go to, and I'm just like, if I would have done blank and blank, oh, that would have been, oh, it's like names just stick and you just don't realize how much they're going to stick. And then you got to say the name, and then you got to talk about them like they're real people, which I still do if I'm doing if I'm talking, in interviews. I talk They're real people to me if I'm talking about these characters. It's Is it the same for you?
Oh yes, my character Tabitha, from Tabitha Get Up and the novel coming out in September, Tabitha Stay Up. She's very real to me. I mean, almost frighteningly so. And I think she's imbued in some ways with the personalities that two of my sisters had, and my mother a bit too. So they're from family members, but there's a kind of freedom in that character. And her name, I don't remember when I first thought of her name, but her name turned out to be resonant because in the Bible, the Apostle Paul meets a woman. Well, she doesn't meet her, she's already dead when he sees her, and he raises her from the dead. And he says, "Tabitha, arise," or in some cases, it's translated Tabitha, get up. And he gets up and you never hear from her again. So
Interest. I love
this
that.
character, yeah. So she just has this little cameo. But I just thought it was such an interesting name. And then I realized at one point she voices some for audio some climate pamphlets. And then I realize if you play around with her name, it's Habitat, which she's very proud of, that it's Habitat. And it's
Wow.
just a name that has a kind of lilt to it. So I in making her, I don't I think of characters, they have to have a desire, but they have to have a wound. And her wound is that in the first book, she has some of the same problems later too. She can't pay her rent. She has no money. She can't get a job because she's been too honest in her jobs and
So
always gets
she's an
fired.
author. Okay, go
She
ahead.
actually has an office. She writes biographies that don't sell or celebrity profiles that get her into trouble.
Oh, I love it.
She's lost her self-respect, but one summer something wonderful happens. Two famous people are in town, and she decides to do the impossible, to write both their biographies at the same time. So I gave her kind of an impossible desire, but lots of wounds, not only economic precarity, but a long ago divorce, virtually no friendships except for her wonderful nephew. And so I started that for Tabitha Get Up. That's her world. And then I let something wonderful happen, but I missed her voice. I wanted to write a sequel. And to do it, I had to kind of pull the rug out from under her, like life
Right. Oh,
always does. And then, but it was really fun, Tabitha's stay out, because once again, it's a character who can very easily not get up in the morning and stay in bed just to avoid the world. But I gave her getting up, and now she has to stay up in the sequel. And I don't want to tell too much, but she has to go home again. And going home, then you sometimes feel you, even if you thought you changed, that you hadn't changed as much as you hoped. So there's that problem too.
When you did, so you knew the scripture in the Bible. Did you have that in mind and were like, I need to, the name is Tabitha, or was it, did you come up with Tabitha and go, oh my God, wait, that's the character that the Apostle Paul raised from the dead?
Yeah, I don't know biblical literature that well. I had the name, and then I looked up the name. I generally will look up name meanings to see if they work, and then I found that, and I love that. And then there's that wonderful Frank O'Hara poem about the actress Lana Turner, and it has that last line. I use it as an epigraph in the book. Lana Turner had fainted. It was all through all the periodicals, the gossip magazines, that she'd fainted. And he has that beautiful last line, "Oh, Lana Turner, we love you, get up." And that, was really worked for me with Tabitha Get Up too. No more fainting. There was a portion of the novel where she literally goes down and spends some time on the floor. But then there are a lot of surprises. And then Tabitha Stay Up, I think, widens her world in some ways. So that's been exciting to keep on with this character. For the Withers Riata, I don't there won't be a sequel. Her story ends at this point. It rounds off. But for Tabitha, I realize in rereading the first Tabitha Get Up that there are little keys in there where I could, like, secret panels I could open, and there were cues about how to write a sequel, so I followed them through.
Interesting. I don't know about you, but I have a hard time rereading my work when
Oh,
it's
yeah.
done. I'm just like the lot I had to adapt the screenplay for my first novel, so I wanted to, and that was great, and it was lovely that they were like, yes, we want you to do it, and I'm like, really? And I was so excited about it, but the last thing I wanted to do was read my damn book again. I'm like, oh my God, I gotta go through this hell. But at the same time, I was like, oh wow, that's like better than I thought it was on some parts. And then I'm like, ooh, so I find it hard. I don't know if you find it hard to
Yeah.
revisit.
You know what I find especially hard is when I'm working on something, work in progress, and then go back and read it and read portions of it, because I got to keep working it over. And I'll get a deep sensation of dread. And dread comes, it's almost a feeling of embarrassment, which is such a small emotion, but I'll feel it, or almost an emotion of shame, to go back in. And what I try to do is to work on other projects and then go back into the work so that I can see it afresh, and it sounds like another person, and then I can be kinder to, what's on the page or what might emerge, and hold it without grappling with it. But because I write poetry too, it's funny with poetry, you're always rereading it, because when you give a reading, you're rereading it. You have to, and that, but even then it changes, or I find myself reworking the poems often. We've probably all seen this. You'll be in a reading with, say, a fiction writer, writer, and the person is changing the work before getting on stage, you know, the published work. And I think that's a very common sort of temptation. And maybe it's just about wanting the work, even after it's published, to keep standing up for you. So that hypercritical portion of our brains, though, it can't continue too far down too deeply, or nothing emerges for me. So I have to be careful, have to be pretty kind, pretty tender, because I know, you know, before I was able to publish these novels, I had maybe eight failed novel manuscripts. They turn into short
Oh,
stories or something
good
else.
for you. I was going to ask how many failed novels, and
Eight.
you preempted me. Eight. And
Yeah.
I want to pause there so all the listeners know that sometimes it takes eight novels to learn how to write a novel. I mean, that's it. The only way you learn how to write a novel is by writing a novel, and
Yeah.
that novel is going to suck, and then you write the next novel.
Yep.
That's
And
the
then the next.
jam.
And it, I mean, it's really, you know, you spend so much time. I mean, that's like one novel I wrote became a short story, and it's in a collection of my short stories. But it had been 300 pages, and it's down to eight type, you know, in final published form, 8 pages. But others became short stories. Others, I won't look at them again. You know, for a while I thought, can I cannibalize anything? No, I can't. They just live elsewhere. It's much easier to write now for me something new than to go back and to look at something that was never quite alive to begin with. So, but yeah, failure, failure, failure. I really do, though, know failure is how the world works. I think there's a lot of failure in anyone's life, and so you know, from to my mind, you kind of embrace it. I think that's why I, you know, really care for these new novels, the sense that the characters have failed, and sometimes in disastrous ways, because the Withers, the character, has, you know, lost a child, she has lost friendships, she has a weight of guilt, but has to soldier on in life. And Tabitha, it seems everything she touches fails in some ways, to the point where she has to somehow learn a kind of self-trust. But she also learns, I think, to find the humor in failures as well too, and to play with language as a way to deal with failing. So I think of failure because I'm interested in kind of comic writing. It's so much of comic writing is about failing again and again and again, and recognizing it in one another that that's our lot is we're going to fail, you know, at least in some ways. Yeah.
Beat 'em up. I tell my students, beat 'em up. What are you doing? Beat 'em up. This isn't good. Beat 'em up. Go harder. Go harder. And it's sadism. It's insane and it's violent, but we have to do that to our characters to make them interesting because we want to see how they get up. Like,
Yeah.
how do they get up when they're knocked down? That's an
Yeah.
interesting story. That's the story we want to know.
Yeah.
On the biographies that Tabitha writes, are they biographies that are based on celebrities?
One is based on her dead dog, and then
She wrote, oh, I like that.
yeah,
Oh, note
yeah.
to self, write a
Yeah.
biography on my dead dog.
Yeah, and another one is based on a local artist, and who had very, you know, very strange sort of conceptual art as well. But those are really fun.
I was hoping that you had someone in mind and you weren't supposed to say, and then I could drag it out of you, and you're like, oh, darn it, okay, it's Rosanna Arquette.
No, well, you know, her main thrust in the first novel, Tabitha Get Up, is to write a biography. You know, there are two people she wants to write a biography of. One is this charismatic actor who's so beautiful, she can't look at him. His face is on the side of buses. Gorgeous, gorgeous human being.
Okay,
And
okay, okay. And with that in mind, did you have a celebrity in mind for that person?
you know, I In some ways, I think one of the most beautiful human beings on the planet is Keanu Reeves, right?
Keanu Reeves, good answer. You got the right answer, young lady. Okay, next.
But actually, I thought this character is so beautiful that he cannot be in our universe. Actually, he's got to be totally
Oh,
fantastical.
wow. Oh, okay.
Yeah, the other bug.
Keanu Reeves is a good one though. It's he's
He's a lovely
he
man.
surely has held up. And I think of and I remember towards the end of the 90s, he was kind of getting dumb. Like it was just kind of like if it was a Keanu Reeves movie, I don't know. And then he got cast in The Matrix, and that was the best casting decision ever because it took all of his kind of weaknesses and strengths together, and he is the Matrix. And then, boom, that was second life career, let's rock it till the end kind of thing.
Yeah, no, it's great. And the John Wick, all those John Wick movies
All the
are
John Wick movies,
incredible. And
which I've only, the first one's great because it's just like, you killed my dog and I'm gonna kill everybody. And it's just like, why am I into this guy who's killing all these humans over a dog? And then I haven't watched the sequels though, because I what happens is some, does another pet die?
I think that once you've killed a dog, I guess you're given license to take it out on humans.
Right. And there's that book, like in filmmaking, Save the Cat. If you save the cat, then I was even I had a class last night. I was talking about Save the Cat, where if you have a hero that's doing immoral things, have them pet a cat, have them do something to an animal. We'll open our hearts to them. Then they can do immoral things. And it's just so funny that they killed John Wick's dog. So now we open our morality curtain and go, you know what? Death is cool. Let's do it. 'Cause they did that. And it's just, I forgot what we're talking about.
We're a horrible species because we will kill.
Yeah, it opens us up to be okay with that much violence. And what is it about us? 'Cause I don't think the human condition is necessarily, like, there's no peace in the human condition. There's this utopia that's supposedly out there. No, there's no existence of that. There's going to be war, and it's going to hurt, and it's just, I don't know why we have that in us, but we have it in us, and we get to satiate it by films like John Wick. It's just so we can go, yes, that's a safe way to get it out of ourselves, to enjoy the story.
Or I guess too with writing, I mean you have to touch that live wire of evil. I have a literary mystery called Wrongful that came out last year, and it's about writers and writers at a literary conference, but it's also about the kind of the vitality of evil and how we can rationalize evil actions. But a lot of it is about the temptations that writers face to project onto others our own fears or to be envious. So it was such great fun to write about these sometimes badly behaved writers and to
Oh,
tap
yeah.
into that. And so I think you're right. I think writing and reading and watching movies, they're kind of a way to deal with parts of the human condition that we really don't want to act upon, but we wouldn't feel complete unless we looked at them. The same way fairy tales are so violent, or biblical or various religious traditions, not all presumably, have a great deal of violence within them. And this the idea of original sin, that somehow we never want to act on these impulses, but to pretend they aren't there, to pretend we can suffocate them, is debilitating in some ways. Anger has its usefulness, boundaries has its usefulness. There's a way in which, writing allows us to work through that in some ways.
Oh, it's so, I feel like it's so profound and so important for like our individual souls to read novels all the time and to write, try to write a novel, even if it doesn't get anywhere. It does something for the mind. And I've realized that on this last novel I've written, where I'm just like, thank you. I just look at the novel and I'm like, you've done everything you need to do for me, because you took me, you got to let me get out certain things. I was also grieving certain things while I was writing the novel, but I knew I can come home and I could work with these characters again. And it's like the novel has done everything on a spiritual level for me that I could ever want. Oh yeah, and by the way, now I gotta get publishers interested in it. Okay. Which is the which is which the which is the part I'm not good at. I'm not happy about, and I try to get into that space of like gratitude, and I love, even when I get a rejection, I'm very grateful for the rejection. It's there. There's where there's great literary people out there that are just like, hey, this isn't for me, but that was funny and blah blah blah. Then sometimes I'll go, try this person, and I'm like, oh, that's so sweet of you. Wow, okay. And then just get another no and no and no, but it keeps me going. And also the next book.
I always feel, someone has spent their time, and to be grateful for that. And there's
Yes.
so many good writers out there. Just
Yeah.
it's really, I think it's a very exciting time. And because of the internet, you can find work that otherwise you couldn't find in your local store or whatever. And maybe that's why there's such a proliferation of kind of mashups of different genres
Huh.
mashing together, because there aren't the same gatekeepers who were perhaps looking for the same kind of novels that garnered a certain sort of respect. And so I think, it's a wild frontier now.
Really? Yeah. I've had a hard time finding books and authors that truly move me, probably in the last 10 years. It's I don't know. Have you have, I was looking you up and I saw you did a interview with Anna. You were one of the interviewees, and also Anna Dorn was one of the interviewees. She wrote Perfume and Pain, and that was a great book. I read that and it was just like, whoa. It just made me happy that there's some contemporary books that are coming out that can touch my soul. But I don't find them too much. I keep going back to the classics. I started Lonesome Dove today. Will I finish it? I don't know. We'll find out. And something about the classics are just really feeding my soul right now. I think probably because I didn't go to college, and I talked to these people and everyone's like, oh yeah, I read that in college. And I'm like, yeah, but I barely dropped out. I barely got out of high school. So maybe I'm just trying to relive the possibility of that. Maybe I did go to college in a previous life or something.
And no one can keep up, with the great things that were
Yes.
written before. I'm just now, I think I might have read part of it or excerpts of Brave New World. I'm just now reading that.
Oh, okay. Do you like it?
And
Because I haven't read that.
yeah, actually, I just started it, and it seems to just forecast our world. I mean, and
Yeah.
We have a sense of people being striated into different positions and different reproductive technologies, and the sense of, you mentioned utopia, this world of a kind of to create and manufacture a kind of frictionless utopia, but that leads
Yeah.
to absolute misery. And
Yeah. Yeah.
like reading and writing, I mean, I think that they're inherently about freedom. And so the sense of opening the world up, I'll never get to all the classics I'd like to read. I have never been able to read Magic Mountain. It's like it claps shut if I'm in the room. But I did recently read some of Jane Austen. I'd read her as a
Oh,
really years ago, and I couldn't get over what a great comic novelist she is. She's so funny. And people, I think they think of her only as a romantic novelist. In some ways, I have a lot of tender, affectionate regard for romantic novels and romantic comedies, but in some ways she's a piercing satirist. And so that's been a lot of fun to read. I'm really fond of, and I seldom do not mention her, Rachel Ingalls, an American writer who lived in England and wrote Mrs. Caliban about this California woman who meets a sea monster who's been in a lab for experimental purposes. And it's just such a touching novel. And the ending is, to my mind, unforgettable. It's almost a kind of poetic ending.
It's for the beauty of endings that can really do the justice to the novels. It's really hard to hit a good ending, I think. I give lots of grace to any book I'm reading. I'm just like, if it ends well, that's cool. But sometimes it like ends where it's a gut punch, and I'm like, oh my God. I just finished Crime and Punishment, and I was just like, whoa. I kind of didn't expect the ending, and I'm just like, whoa. And then it went to the epilogue, and then I didn't expect that. And then, but it wasn't so unexpected that it didn't make sense. It all made sense as a whole. And it's so hard to do to have the ending match up to the greatness of any novel, I think is hard to do.
Yeah, I think it was, I don't know, maybe Edith Wharton said that the ending should be surprising but inevitable, and that just seems impossible. I once wrote a short story to an ending. I wanted the ending to be, I think it was, of course there were squirrels. I thought, how can I get to that ending?
Oh, I
And
love that.
it was re it was really really fun to get to that to get that to that ending. I've never tried that any other time, but sometimes, I don't know if you do this, but sometimes I give myself little tasks or little structural problems to get out of my head and get out of negative cycles about how the work isn't working. Because I've found, I mean, years ago I used to work for as a freelance writer for a newspaper. That's how I paid my way through college, and I got a case of kind of writer's block. The stuff I wrote on entertainers and people passing through town, singers or actors, and I would find that I'd get really nervous before I had to bring in a story. But then we started getting all this computer technology, and I had to do things in a different way. And so suddenly I was so worried about that that I didn't worry about the writing. And so sometimes when I'm having a hard time, I'll give myself a kind of task with the writing. I did that with the mystery Wrongful about the literary conferences. I told myself what I hadn't done much of in writing. I hadn't done much of moving from one head to another head to another head within the same chapter. That seemed, like a mosquito moving over the page. How could I do this? But doing that was such fun for me. I didn't know quite how to do that, although, we've all read, books that do that. But that giving myself that allowed me to not, my mind then wasn't focused so much on how good the work was at first. It was, can I do it? So the technical matters, I think, sometimes are freeing. The same way with poetry, when you're working with a form, you can surprise yourself because the unconscious or subliminal part of yourself will feed the poem in a way you never expected because the form is, constraining you in a different direction.
Yeah, cool. I have to use the bathroom so bad. I've been holding it in. So come, hang on
Okay,
one second.
great, great.
Speaking of using the restroom, I interviewed David Sedaris many years ago, and he was trying this thing that you wear to sporting events where you could pee into a little bag in your leg. And so he would wear it at his some of his book readings, some of his signings,
Oh
and he only him and his boyfriend were the only one, or they I don't know if they were married or not at the time, but they were the only ones that knew that he had his little pee thing, and then he kept bumping him, trying to like do it's hilarious. It all stayed in the interview, so it's nothing like this was not not a private thing, but I was just sitting there just now going, I wish I had that because what she's saying is so great, but like I'm going to burst. My bladder is going to spew all over
I'm
the
sorry I
place.
kept you.
No, it's all right. It stays in the show. Tony's bladder. What's up? But yeah, now what were we talking about now that I have my brain back?
Oh my gosh.
And we don't need to remember. Remembering's for suckers. Oh, this is the question I wanted to ask you because you said that book you wrote was about writers' conferences. Do you go to a lot of writers' conferences?
I wish I went to more, actually. I'm going to the Columbus Book Festival, which is coming up in a week or so, and I'm
Oh,
looking
cool.
forward to that. But I'd love to go to more of them. I like I did for years go to the Associated Writers Program conference
Right, right,
and
right.
all, and but it, that gets kind of expensive at a certain point. But so I went with them, and one of my daughters is a writer also, so that's really great to be able to see her. So we would meet there and all. But no, I'd like to go to more of them. It's they're kind of exciting. It's also exciting to be among other writers and all
Yeah.
too. Yeah.
My friend lives in Columbus and she just told me, she's like, Tony, you got oh, she keeps telling me to come out and visit her and her husband. And because we used to do sketch comedy together like 20 years ago in San Francisco. Yeah. So we wrote some sketches together, but she's just like, you got to come out. There's even a literary fest. She keeps trying to like lean into like, it's a literary town. And, but I really want to visit Columbus. I can't, there's so much of so many cities in the United States that I haven't visited that I'm longing to visit. And Columbus is one of them. It just seems like a really rich artistic community there that I can get really excited about.
Yeah, no, it sounds wonderful. I've never been there either, but the book festival, the organizers are so welcoming
Yeah.
and all. So I'm excited to be part of it.
That's very cool. Her book is called The Withers. Her name is Lee Upton. Lee, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It really is. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Pirate Cat Radio, KPCR LP 92.9 FM Los Gatos, and KMRT LP 101.9 FM Santa Cruz.